Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
This week's portion is Vayechi, and he lived. Genesis 47:28-50:26. The Haftarah portion is 1 Kings 1:2-1-12. And the Apostolic Scripture portion is Luke 1:31-33. This is the last portion in the book of Genesis. And next week we start the book of Shemot or Exodus. See, we run right through Genesis, and we're already at Exodus. The introduction. Jacob is about to die. He has to be buried with Abraham and Isaac in the cave of Machpelah. Let us do as Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob did. Walk in the ways of the Almighty and hold fast to His covenant. When their world swirled around them, the patriarchs held fast to the covenant of the Almighty. Can we do any less? Genesis 48:8-16. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel. This is what their father said to them as he blessed them, blessing each with the blessing suitable to him. Then he commanded them and said to them, I am to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, to the east of Mamre, in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field from Ephron the Hittite to possess as a burying place. There they buried Abraham and Sarah his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah his wife. And there I buried Leah. The field and the cave that is in it were bought from the Hittites. When Jacob finished commanding his sons, he drew up his feet into the bed and breathed his last and was gathered to his people. It's interesting as you look at that, at the end of the book of Genesis is the last of the patriarchs. It is the last of the three patriarchs. We have the death of Jacob. It's kind of interesting because that would mirror the death of Moses, which closes out the book of Deuteronomy when you get up to there. So it's interesting for all these little things that just pop up here and there in Scripture. And you notice how insistent he is upon the fact that he wants to be buried in the Promised Land. He wants to be buried in the cave of Machpelah. Why in Machpelah? Because that was one of the few parcels of land that they actually owned, other than what God had promised to them. God promised them the whole land of Canaan, but it was only going to come to pass after them. They sojourned in the land. They wandered in the land while they were there. They became wealthy in the land while they were there. The Lord took care of them. The Lord watched over them. The Lord made sure that everything was fine with them. We do know that after the death of Abraham, that Isaac had some little tensions going on with people in the land there filling in the wells that his father had dug. And then he having to go dig them out again, and he renamed them again. They gave a name to everything. Everything in there. I think it was by naming it, they felt that they possessed it, that they owned it. And it's basically almost the way, you know, with the Jewish people today and being in the land of Israel, that they name it, it's theirs. And it's a promise that God had given to his people. He didn't give it just to the Jewish people. He gave it to all of Israel. All 12 tribes of Israel plus anyone who chooses to join themselves to Israel. That's a promise that is meant for each and every one of us who want to walk in that way. Who want to be part of that. Who want to be part... I believe, you know, personally, that it's not the Israel that we're looking at today that's going to be there unless they turn to Messiah. It will be a reconstituted Israel from all believers across all rangers that will believe in Messiah and walk in Torah. That is His covenant that He's given to us. The Torah is His covenant. The Promised Land is our land too. The thing about going to the Promised Land today is that you really can't go over there and want to live there as a believer unless they don't ask you the question when you want to go into the land. There's a tentative question that they'll ask you is, do you believe in Yeshua? I do know of some Messianics that have lied about it in order to gain entrance into the land of Israel. It's a sad state of affairs that how does that go before the Lord and denying your Messiah, no matter how righteous you think you may be or how right you think you may be, that you would lie about the fact that about your faith in Messiah to gain entrance to the land of Israel. That's sad. Nobody should ever have to do that. We should never have to hide our faith. We should always be able to share that, and we should always be able to walk in that. And we should always be able to do what we need to do in order to share it. But as you watch this world changing, the freedom to express what you believe is slowly being squashed. It's slowly being taken away from us. It's being removed. It's being pushed down. And we need to stand strong for what we believe and what we want, the same as the patriarchs did. The same as those who came after them did. You need to walk in that covenant, because if you don't walk in that covenant and you don't maintain your faith with God, then God will not maintain His faith with you. He won't do it. He refuses to do it. So we need to be very careful about that. So Jacob, he wanted to be buried in the cave of Machpelah, in the land, in a place that now today is known as Hebron, which of course everybody knows by now that Hebron was given back to the Palestinians. So I would have to say that the Jewish people are denying their own heritage and their own beliefs and what they claim they know or what they think they know. And that's a sad state of affairs too. It was an interesting thing this past week. I got this inquiry from this guy who wanted some information about the school and all that. Well, first, he really didn't ask for information about the school. He was asking a question about the lineage of Messiah. And I knew exactly where it was going as soon as he asked that question. I knew that the only ones that ask that kind of question are anti-missionaries. And, of course, when I responded back with a couple of responses myself, he immediately came back with the whole line. He had a hook, line, and sinker right down the page of every argument that's made against the lineage of Messiah. The interesting thing about it is that the lineage is the only thing that they can attack. On the flip side of it is that the Messiah is supposed to bring peace to the world and is supposed to come and rule and reign and do all of that. And he said that Yeshua didn't do that. And I said, neither did any Messiah that the Jewish people have claimed in their history. I said, because that's talking about the second coming of the Messiah, not the first coming. Well, after that he said, what kind of rabbi are you? You know, he's going down the page there. So all I did was write back, ha 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 ha. And then he wrote me back again and he said, and then I blocked his email. I've had those arguments in the past. I'm getting too old for him. I don't even want to go over it all over again. I feel sorry for him. I feel sorry for him for the fact that he's living in his ignorance and he's arguing against the validity of the Messiah. I hope that one day, and I pray, that the reality and the truth will come to him. And that he'll see it. But I know I'm not the one that's supposed to share that with him, because all he wanted to do with me was argue. I don't want to argue. It's just, you know, it takes up too much time and effort. I want to put my energy somewhere else. So, you know, I just pray that somebody else along the way will encounter him and will be able to share with him and show him who Yeshua truly is. But it all depends, because as things change, as the world is changing, we're seeing a changing of belief in people. We're watching things change. And it's a very sad state of affairs when we do that. Luke 17:6, the Lord replied, if you had the faith the size of a mustard seed, you could say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and planted in the sea, and it would obey you. If you had the faith the size of a mustard seed. He was telling this to his disciples. He was talking about their faith, that they needed to have faith, because if they had the faith that they really really held on to and strongly believed, then they could do anything. And so that tells us the same thing, that if we hold on to our faith and we ask the Lord to increase our faith, think about what we could do. Literally, think about what we could do. We could change the world. We could change it for the better. We could get it off the path that it's on today. This world is rapidly becoming one that is becoming overpowered by Islam. Slowly but surely, any way that you want to cut it. I think I was read it this morning on a news thing that I think it's in the United States. Various communities in the United States are passing laws to bar Sharia law to be practiced within their limits and what they're doing. I think it's about time somebody stood up.
Yes.
And somebody did something about, because Sharia law is not God's law. It doesn't come from God. It has nothing to do with the Torah. It has nothing to do with it whatsoever. Why should we be under the law of a Muslim who doesn't believe in the same God that we do? And if he tries to tell you opposite that, then asking them, why does your God have the symbols of a moon? Why is that a symbol for them? A lot of people don't realize that before Islam came into being, that Arabs and all the other ones there, they were pagans. They worshipped idols. Even one of their idols was Mary, the mother of Yeshua. A lot of people didn't know that and didn't understand that, but you have to remember that their prophet, Muhammad, was going out there trying to convert anybody that he could get to do it. And he even took his religion to the Jewish people, who rejected it. They rejected it, and he got angry at them. He took it to the Christians. They rejected it. They didn't want it either. They say that they're an old religion. They're not an old religion. They say that the founder of their religion was Ishmael and Abraham. But come on. You know? I would have to say that their Bible is no Bible whatsoever and has no truth in it whatsoever. You know, their claim to Jerusalem that they're so upset about is not even in the Quran, their Bible. There's no mention of it whatsoever. It's in their other writings. They have other writings outside of that. And it's only mentioned in there that Muhammad and his horse took off from the Temple Mount and was taken up to heaven. I really don't think he flew to heaven. I'm sorry. I think that the horse went up and took a downturn. That's just my thinking. You know, I'm sure that when this video goes out there, somebody might pick up on that one. And I refuse to cut that out, Ray. I'm not taking that out of the video whatsoever. I can stay in there. They can do whatever. I've been threatened by the Muslims in the past. They would always write me to argue with me all the time too about things that I have posted on my website that were pieces of the Quran and what they had said in there. And they would argue with me about that, and they said, you're taking it out of context. I said, you're taking it out of context where it says you're going to kill the Jews. Well, it's out of context. I said, how? Explain to me how it's kill the Jews is out of context. Well, you just didn't read the whole thing. I said, yes, I did. I said, it's all there. So, you know, you have to remember one thing, and a lot of people forget this. They promised first to get rid of the Saturday people. But they also said that after that they're going to get rid of the Sunday people. Who worships on Sunday? When do Muslims worship? Friday. Interesting, is it not? Think about that. 1 Kings 2:1. When David's time to die drew near, he commanded Solomon his son, saying, I am about to go the way of all the earth. Be strong and show yourself a man. And keep the charge of the Lord your God, walking in his ways and keeping his statutes, his commandments, his rules, and his testimonies. And as is written in the Torah of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn. that the Lord may establish his word that he spoke concerning me, saying, if your sons pay close attention to their way, to walk before me in faithfulness with all their heart, with all their soul, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. This was David speaking to Solomon. Wonder how David would have reacted had he been shown what Solomon would do. I'm just, you know, wondering about that. You know, when you think about that. And among his sons there, I don't know how many really would have followed in his footsteps. Well, some of them may have followed in his footsteps in certain areas. But the one thing about David, you know, he was a man of blood. He was the one that had to unify Israel and fight for that. So he brought the promised land together and did what he needed to do. But his desire was to build a house for God. But he was forbidden to do so because he was a man that had blood on his hands. It was going to be left to his son Solomon to do it because Solomon would be a man of peace. But the way that Solomon went about gaining that peace, I wonder if that was truly pleasing to God. And the end result of that also is that Solomon turned away from God. David never forsook God. He never turned away from him. He stayed faithful to him. He even tells Solomon, keep the charge of the Lord your God, walking in his ways, keeping his statutes, his commandments, his rules, and his testimonies. And where do you find that? He tells him, it is written in the Torah of Moses. This is a revealing of the Torah, the full Torah, that they would know and that they would follow. And that is the covenant that God made between his people and himself. If you don't follow Torah, you're not in God's covenant. The Torah is part of that covenant, along with the faith that you have in his son, Yeshua. The Torah doesn't save you. It was never meant to do that. It was meant to show you what God considers to be sin. It was meant to show you how to walk the right road and the right path. It's all about faith. It's always been about faith. If you have faith in God, you're partway down there. If you have faith in Yeshua, you are way down that road. But at the same time, you're called to walk the road following God's Torah. Why God's Torah? Because it belongs to him. He gave it to his people as a covenant, and he never withdrew it. He never took it away. I don't care what anybody tells you. A lot of people want to say, well, we have a new covenant today. Where do you find mention of the new covenant? In the old covenant. The original covenant. The only covenant that he made. That's mentioned in the book of Ezekiel and in the book of Jeremiah and also in the book of Deuteronomy. Mentioned in there, so it has its origins in the book of Deuteronomy and is carried through. It's reiterated and repeated over and over and over again in the apostolic scriptures. It's nothing new that they invented or came up with. It's always been the covenant that he's wanted us to do. And they claim today that you don't need to follow the law anymore. You're not saved by the law. We've never been saved by the law. I agree with him. You've never been saved by it. We walk in faith with him. In Luke 1:31-33. Look, you will become pregnant. You will give birth to a son. And you are to name him Yeshua. He will be great. He will be called the son of Ha-Elyon. Adonai God will give him the throne of his forefather David. And he will rule the house of Yaakov forever. There will be no end to his kingdom. So his name was to be Yeshua. Yes, I know if you look in a Christian Bible today, it says, and you are to name him Jesus. I beg to differ with them. That's not what they said in there. Scriptures were, a lot of these books were written originally in Hebrew. By Hebrew speakers, by Hebrew writers. They may have been translated later by others into Greek who changed these things. But interesting enough, if you put it in there and you put Jesus in there, the Greek for it is iosis. So where's the J? There's no J. You can't even make iosis into Jesus. You could put an I on the front of it, but it, what? Isis? You know? You think about that. His name in the Hebrew is actually Yehoshua. Yehoshua means Joshua in English. That is the actual name of the Messiah. It's the contraction when you have it as Yeshua, because Yeshua comes from the Aramaic and not from the Hebrew. And it means the Lord is salvation. So the name Jesus, used in the English New Testament, comes from the Latin form of the Greek iosis, a rendition of the Hebrew Yeshua, related to the name Joshua. The name is thus related to the Hebrew verb root for rescue or deliver, and one of its noun forms, Yeshua, which means deliverance. That is a brief explanation of the actual name of our Messiah. Not the one that everybody else made up. Now, yes, people are going to say, well, what difference does it make what name that you use? What if you're using a name that somebody made up that's not a real name? Think about that. Is God going to hear you if you have used a name that is made up and has actually no basis in fact and is not there? You have to think about that. I mean, you get down to Jesus after you come through Hebrew, Latin, and Greek. Think about that. That's the evolution of his name and where you get to it. And if you transliterate it, there's no way that you can transliterate iosis to Jesus. It doesn't work. It doesn't come out for that. And yes, the name of the Son of God and even the name of God causes contention all over the place. I know there's somebody out there today that's going around saying he discovered the real name of God. He actually makes a little bit more sense in what he brings out of there than a lot of other people have over time. But he claims that he found it in one of the original manuscripts that it was used as the basis for the Tanakh. He says that actually in four places in that manuscript, the vowels were there underneath the name of God. I couldn't see why somebody would put the vowels underneath in just four places. What happened to the rest of all the places that are in there? What about all the rest of the words that are in the Bible? So we need to be careful about these things. You know, we just have to be careful. You know, I hear people pronounce Yeshua's name as Yahushua. And they say that it has to be Yehoshua because Yah is the name of the Father, and you have to have the name of the Father and the name of the Son, so it can't be Yeshua, it has to be Yehoshua. You have to have the Yah in there in order to make it right. Well, that's not the way that it's written in Hebrew. When you look at the Hebrew vowel in there makes it an eh sound. It doesn't make it an ah sound. It's not there. It doesn't exist when you put the vowels in there. The importance is, what does his name mean? His name means the Lord is salvation. He is salvation. He is redemption. In Psalm 119:9 it says, he sent redemption to his people. He has commanded his covenant forever. Holy and awesome is his name. He sent redemption to his people. He sent Yeshua to his people. But actually the word for redemption there is not Yeshua, it's the Hebrew word paduth. And the Hebrew word paduth means ransom. So he sent the ransom to his people. Who is our ransom? Messiah, Yeshua. You need to dig into these words in order to translate them correctly, and then you see the picture of Yeshua all over Scripture. He's everywhere. He's everywhere. He starts all the way back in the book of Genesis. He was there when creation took place. And a lot of people don't understand that. He was there from the very beginning because the Father used the Son in order to create everything that there is. And why did He create everything that there was through Yeshua? Because everything that He created for Messiah. We were created for Messiah. So does that mean that Yeshua got to play with us when He was a little boy? Just like little dollies and whatever that came out of the thing there? No, it wasn't meant for that. We were created for Him because it was a gift from the Father to His Son. And it was that He was to be the redemption for mankind. No one else could do it except the One who created us. And Yeshua was the One who created us by the power of His Father. So we always have to remember, we need to hold on to our faith in Messiah. We need to not only just hold on to our faith, we have to make that faith grow. We have to grow our faith and become strong. Because what happens if the end times begin to unfold before us and things begin to change in such a way that it begins to affect our ability to be able to openly worship? We're going to have to be strong for that. We don't know what we're going to face and what we're going to go through. We need to be prepared for what's going to be coming. We need to think about it. Are we going to be here when it comes? I don't know. A lot of us are getting older. Maybe we won't be around. I know that if I pass away before the tribulation comes, it's not going to disappoint me. Because I know when I wake up where I'll be. I know where God has given me the promise, and I know that He's made that covenant, and if I hold fast to my faith and hold fast to the covenant, I will be there in the end in His kingdom. And that's what each and every one of us should hope for. What each and every one of us should hold on to, that promise that He gave to us. And I'm going to close with this. Torah Man says, when faithfulness is most difficult, it is most rewarding.